WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. Early voting begins today on a referendum to redraw Virginia's congressional districts. Federal grant money is helping to fix an ongoing sewage problem in Albemarle County. And Jeff Shapiro surveys the week in Virginia politics. This is the WMRA Daily for Friday, March 6th. Early voting begins today across Virginia for a referendum that would allow the General Assembly to redraw the state's congressional districts ahead of this fall's midterm elections. If voters approve, the move could reshape the current 6-5 partisan split in Virginia's delegation into a map favoring Democrats in as many as 10 of the state's 11 districts. The referendum comes amid an ongoing series of legal challenges and court rulings that have created uncertainty about the election's legality. Virginia's Supreme Court said it will issue a ruling after voting is done on April 21st. Polls are open today from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. A $2 million federal grant is headed to Albemarle County to fix a basic problem that has shaped life at the Southwood Mobile Home Park for years. Sewage. WMRA's Angelie Schindler reports.
Habitat for Humanity of Greater Charlottesville is redeveloping the Southwood Mobile Home community into a mixed-income neighborhood of more than 1,000 homes, including duplexes, townhouses, and apartments. But the project's newest funding will address what's still there now, aging septic systems serving families who haven't moved into new units yet.
And everything south of Hickory Street is all on septic. That septic failed long before we purchased it, so you had septic bubbling up in people's homes, bubbling up in playgrounds where kids played.
Dan Rosenzweig is president and CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Charlottesville. He says those failing septic systems help determine which parts of Southwood were redeveloped first.
We really prioritize getting these folks who are in the worst part, the worst septic fields, out first.
The nonprofit broke ground on the project in 2020 and has received federal funds multiple times since then for various phases of construction. This grant will help tie parts of the community into public sewer and replace a private sewer system north of Hickory Street. For a small number of mobile homes that remain, Rosenzweig says Habitat plans a temporary fix, pumping sewage into the new sewer line while those families are rehoused.
On the north side of the park is all permanent infrastructure, and then we will do some temporary lines, pump sewage from their tanks into these lines. Rather than them leaching into the ground, it will go into lines that will go into the sewer system.
Southwood's redevelopment is happening in phases. Rosenzweig laid out the progress so far. Phase one includes 335 newly built units, and about 217 of them are designated affordable. He says about 90 of those units are now occupied by Southwood families who relocated from the original mobile home park. For WMRA News, I'm Angelie Schindler.
You can see photos of the community at WMRA.org and on our app. Democrats in the General Assembly want to hold the gun industry responsible. Under what's called public nuisance laws that is working in other states, Virginia Public Radio's Brad Kuttner reports.
A manufacturer of a toy gun who creates defects in their toy is liable, but a gun manufacturer or dealer who does the same thing can't be sued, and we're fixing that in Virginia.
That's Fairfax area Delegate Dan Helmer describing his proposed law that's working its way through both legislative chambers. They're called public nuisance laws. If a company makes a public nuisance, they could be sued for financial damages. It was the backbone of the successful opioid lawsuits that saw Virginia collect millions in settlements with drug companies. But Floyd County Republican Ren Williams argued in the House chamber the effort is preempted by a 2005 federal law which limits lawsuits against the gun industry.
It manufactures a state law violation, so the lawsuits Congress banned can start right back up here in Virginia.
New York was among the first states to expand liability to gun manufacturers. Since passed in 2021, the Empire State has successfully defended the law from those federal preemption concerns and landed a multi-million dollar judgment against ghost gun manufacturers. Fairfax County Senator Jennifer Carroll Foy has a version of the bill in the Senate.
We regulate everything from tires to teddy bears, but we don't regulate the gun industry. It is one of the only industries that have almost complete immunity, and we don't want that. No one is above the law.
The matching bills are likely to land on Governor Abigail Spanberger's desk in the coming weeks. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
Virginia is the newest state to join the Northeast Public Health Collaborative. That's a voluntary coalition of public health leaders and agencies sharing expertise and promoting and protecting evidence-based public health measures. Virginia Health Commissioner Cameron Webb said the multi-state effort will ensure that communities will start seeing, quote, positive public health outcomes as the norm. Virginia is the 11th state to join the coalition. Virginia Attorney General Jay Jones joined more than 20 Democratic-led states Thursday in suing President Donald Trump's administration over a new round of sweeping tariffs. The Virginia Mercury reports the lawsuit argues the president is again attempting to impose taxes on Americans without congressional approval. The lawsuit, filed in the U.S. Court of International Trade, challenges the administration's decision to impose tariffs of up to 15% on most products worldwide. Under Section 122 of the Trade Act of 1974, state officials contend the move is an attempt to sidestep a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that struck down earlier tariffs imposed under emergency powers. The House of Delegates rejected a proposal to set up a state-level certification process for data centers and other high-demand facilities. Patrick Larson with VPM News explains.
State Senator Conin Srinivasan's proposal made it out of the Senate with limited bipartisan support. The Loudoun Democrat told a House subcommittee Tuesday that although localities review land use and zoning,
most of the significant consequences of these projects, including the electric grid, reliability and transmission, and alignment with the Commonwealth's energy policy, extends far beyond local boundaries.
He proposed ordering the State Corporation Commission to review those cross-locality impacts, but the subcommittee opted instead to send a letter to the commission, requesting them to review the proposal. Dominion Energy, which will serve the majority of demand growth in Virginia brought on by data centers, opposed the legislation, as did the advocacy group Data Center Coalition. They argue it would take decision-making power from localities, and that the measure could deter data center investments in the Commonwealth.
Patrick Larson reporting. Governor Abigail Spanberger is considering a bill that would reveal the identity of parents who put their children up for adoption. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
People who were adopted often struggle with wanting to know more about where they came from and who their parents are. Now, members of the Virginia General Assembly are sending a bill to the governor that would unseal adoption records. Here's Senator Jeremy McPike, a Democrat from Prince William County.
Fundamentally, what we're talking about, a government withholding basic information about who they are. I mean, that's a pretty big government action of holding the core information about where you are in the universe.
Senator Emily Jordan is a Republican from the Isle of Wight who was adopted, and she says she's fine with unsealing information about hospitals and locations, but she says unsealing names is a bad idea.
We are taking away someone else's rights that made a decision 18 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, away from a person that made a decision at that time retroactively. I would wholeheartedly support this bill if we had redaction of those names.
A spokeswoman for the governor says she'll consider this bill, along with hundreds of other bills lawmakers are sending her this month. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
State lawmakers made last-minute changes to a bill that will reshape the landscape for medical malpractice lawsuits. Dean Mirshahi with VPM News has more.
The bill from Rockingham Republican State Senator Mark Obenchain was simple. He proposed adding one line to state code so that the interest people collect in medical malpractice cases before a final verdict isn't included in the state's cap on final payments ordered by a court. But while the House of Delegates was in recess on Wednesday, a House committee held a special meeting to take up a rewrite of the bill. In one of its biggest changes, the new bill more than doubles the state's cap on payments for malpractice claims to $6 million by next year. The changes surprised some in the room, including Obenchain.
I do appreciate that this has caused a bit of whiplash, and it has to me too.
The committee advanced the bill for a full House floor vote before the 2026 session ends next week.
Dean Mirshahi reporting. Special interests that want to allow online gambling may be one step closer to their goal. Michael has the details.
Online gambling has become one of the hottest issues of this year's General Assembly session, and unlike most stuff that happens around here, it does not fall along party lines. Senate Majority Leader Scott Surovell, a Democrat, says regulating online gaming is the best way to deal with the illegal market that's already flourishing.
The best way for us to deal with it is to license it, regulate it, and tax it. That way we have control over it. instead of having the Wild West of the internet deciding what to do.
That's not an argument that's persuading 3 Democrats and 14 Republicans in the Senate. Here's Republican Senator Bill Stanley of Franklin County.
Researchers say that these products are 10 times more addictive than the slot machine at a physical casino. The claim that legalization curbs the illegal marketplace is just not correct. Pennsylvania's illegal gambling participation grew from 6 to 10% in 1 year after legalization of iGaming. Legalization feeds the black market by normalizing the behavior.
Members of the General Assembly are holding their bets for now. The version that passed the Senate this week has a reenactment clause. Even if the governor signs the bill, online casinos will have to start over with new legislation next year. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Well, early voting is getting underway today on a constitutional amendment to redraw Virginia's congressional districts. But will the results be allowed to stand? Politics analyst Jeff Shapiro joins Michael to recap the week in politics and state government.
Early voting starts today in this amendment to gerrymander all the congressional districts. Jeff Shapiro, what can we expect from the voting on this constitutional amendment?
45 days, Michael, of early voting leading up to the referendum itself on April 21st. And in the final run-up to the start of early voting, the Virginia Supreme Court cleared the last legal obstacle to the commencement of early voting. By the way, this is a court now led by the first black woman to serve as Chief Justice, Cleo Powell. She made very clear, certainly the court has made very clear, that while it is allowing the referendum to go forward, the legal and constitutional questions surrounding redistricting remain. It's entirely possible that voters could affirm this 10D, 1R plan, and the Virginia Supreme Court could say it was legally less than kosher.
One of the biggest issues this General Assembly session has been consideration of this tax break for data centers. So these are very wealthy companies. They stand to make a lot of money, and yet they get this huge tax break. It's worth like more than $1 billion. That's billion with a B. The Senate gets rid of this tax exemption for the data centers. The House does not. How do you think this is going to square out when they strike their deal next week?
All right. As we head into the final week of the session, the budget, of course, a big piece of business. This disagreement between the House and the Senate over these data centers, I suspect, has something to do with the respective heads of the money committees. Luke Torian is from Prince William County, a jurisdiction rich, pun unintended, with data centers. Louise Lucas from the seacoast of Virginia, where we're seeing lots and lots of alternative, mostly wind power, popping up. She would also like to see these tax breaks, which are costing close to $2 billion, like to see that money steered to education, healthcare, and other services.
We have seen a lot of politics around appointments to board of visitors at higher education institutions in Virginia. What kind of approach is Spanberger taking that's different than the previous governor?
Well, right now the governor has a chance to sign legislation that would alter and speed up the process for considering gubernatorial appointments to the boards of visitors. All of this a response by Democrats to the hyper-partisan or the perceived hyper-partisan approach of Glenn Youngkin, the Republican predecessor to Abigail Spanberger, and these various attempts by Youngkin in league with the Trump administration to run off university leadership deemed indefensibly woke.
And then up the road in Washington, of course, there's lots of debate in Congress about this new war in Iran. What are Tim Kaine and Mark Warner saying about this?
These are the two of the loudest voices in this national debate over Trump's war. Mark Warner, the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee, is telling anyone who will listen, of course, he's a candidate for re-election, that the intel indicates that Iran was anything but a threat at this time. Tim Kaine, who was elected to the Senate in part on a pledge to do something about Congress taking back its power to declare war, pushed a vote on the floor of the Senate that would rein in Trump's ability to wage this war. He was turned down on a largely partisan vote.
All right, that's all the time that we've got for this week. Coming to you from the historic third floor mezzanine of the Virginia Capitol, my name is Michael Pope, and we have been joined by politics analyst and UVA scholar Jeff Shapiro. Talk to you next week for the last week of the General Assembly session.
It'll be a blast.
Finally today, a Harrisonburg staple, Glenn's Fair Price store, is preparing to sell their building and auction off their remaining merchandise after 84 years of business. WMRA's Kate Bean reports.
They used to say there was three things you did in Harrisonburg back in the old day when they'd bring like a politician or something through running for office or something, and they would take him and get him a Jess's hot dog, bring him to Glenn's, and then take him to Klein's ice cream.
Gary Steitler walked me through Glenn's Fair Price store in October, just 2 months before the iconic Harrisonburg costume, camera, toy, and trinket shop closed. He was in the process of organizing inventory into three categories: keep for auction, throw away, and save for personal memorabilia. Steitler shares two pieces of the story's history with me. The first is a Christmas card with a staff photo from when his father owned the store in the 1950s. The second is a photograph from the 1980s. It shows a group of men who were close friends of the store when Gary and his sister, Melinda Bear, began operating the business.
I don't even remember these pictures. This is Jess's Lunch's son that ran Jess's Lunch. This guy worked for him called Butterball. There's Ralph Sampson. This brings back a lot of memories because Ralph Sampson was a very good friend of mine.
The Ralph Sampson Steitler points out in the photograph is the father of NBA basketball player Ralph Sampson Jr. Steitler reminisces about watching Sampson Jr. grow up, as Harrisonburg also grew and changed. Steitler keeps finding sentimental items like these amongst the vast inventory waiting to be sorted for the final auction. He says buyers have already shown a lot of interest in the fixtures and shelving, but he expects that the store's unique inventory will draw in all kinds of bidders.
There'll be those people that'll come for costumes. Some people probably come for some of our makeup. Some people for some of the better giftware and so forth.
Something that definitely won't be for sale are the notorious Elvis and Marilyn Monroe statues.
Everybody has wanted to buy them. A lot of people's pictures have been taken with them. I was so tickled when I finally got them. And I'm thinking they're going to go home with me.
The store began as a standard over-the-counter drugstore, but by the 1980s, it specialized in cameras, costumes, and other items their customers might special request. Bowman Auctions is helping Steitler and his family sell these items. The first of two lots will be auctioned at the store March 21st, starting at 9 a.m. Steitler's son, Gary Steitler Jr., grew up working in the store. He said the million-dollar question for him lately has been, what's next?
It's time. I mean, it's time for them to enjoy themselves, relax, retire, even though they're not going to relax. It's time for a new start for me, so can't even look till this is done.
The elder Steitler says a lot of the cameras and accessories were sold before Glenn's Fair Price officially closed down. He says he will continue supplying JMU's art photography program with what he can from the remaining inventory. Gary Jr. sold camera film to a student as I stood in the store speaking with
because
them.
Because if I don't help with supplying some cameras and so forth for that, I feel like it's pretty sure that it will be something that will disappear. And I think it's so great that young people get the opportunity to develop a picture, see how it's done, and learn from that.
The store also sold a lot of their costumes during a 50% off closing sale. Most of the buyers were Halloween shoppers, but a large portion of the costumes were sold to Court Square Theater. As the Harrisonburg Citizen reported, the theater was scheduled to close on the same day that Glenn's closed, December 31st, 2025. As of now, the Court Square Theater is still open under the management of the Act One Theater Company. Steitler reflected on the closing of Glenn's and the near end of Court Square.
It'd be a real loss to downtown Harrisonburg.
The Harrisonburg Redevelopment and Housing Authority, which owns part of the Court Square Theater building, also plans to buy Glenn's physical building once the inventory is cleared. Their plan is to convert it into affordable apartments.
To me, it's probably the most suiting situation for this building that there would be. It's just perfect, and this town really needs low-income housing.
Steitler said the city's plan is for the development to refurnish and keep the Glenn's Fair Price sign up to honor the store's memory. The display windows will also stay up and be used for historical or promotional displays from Harrisonburg Downtown Renaissance. Steitler was one of their founding members.
And I think that's cool. I just really do. So in a way, we'll still be here.
Once everything has settled, retirement for Steitler looks picturesque.
I like maybe just get in the car finally and go out and shoot. Not just
along with taking spontaneous drives to go shoot some photos, he plans to work on his house and sort his camera and film collections. Glenn's Fair Price will continue to update their Facebook page with information about the auctions at the end of March. You can also visit the Bowman Auction website for more information. For WMRA News, I'm Kate Bean.
We posted photos and links to more information at WMRA.org and on our app. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Friday.